It's time for the Phenology Show. Phenology is the rhythmic biological nature of events as they relate to climate. And I was just looking over some of my notes from the past week and looking back in time. And for instance, on the 7th of June this year, that was a week ago today, I saw my first blue flags, the wild iris, blooming. And so I thought, well, I wonder how that compares. So I went back in and I looked, and the average date for blue flag, for wild iris to bloom, is the 8th of June. So we are right back on schedule, which may surprise some of you, because a month ago, the 1st of May would have been the average date for the leaf out of the aspens, and it didn't happen until the 9th of May. And so we were more than a week behind a month ago. And somehow, at least in some species, we have caught up, and we are now running just about on schedule, at least with the blue flag. A couple of notes that I wanted to get to. One, painted turtles. Last Monday night, I had three of them up in my yard laying eggs. Now, painted turtles come out in June and lay their eggs, and then 80 to 90 days later, those eggs hatch. And sometimes when those eggs hatch, little baby turtles emerge from the nest and crawl around and find their way back to a lake where they will spend the fall fattening up a little bit, and then dive into the bottom of that lake and settle into the mud for a 7-month sleep, and then they'll be out again next spring. But the thing that seemed to trigger them, and I haven't seen many lately, but the really hot weather, Monday, you may recall, a week ago Monday, the temperatures climbed to above 100 in Minneapolis, and state records were set all over the place last Monday in terms of heat. And as far as I'm concerned, though they don't keep state records of it, humidity, it was a pretty tough day and night to be here in northern Minnesota. It was pretty sweaty and warm a week ago, and the turtles were out. Now, I haven't seen very many since, and generally, once they come out, that warm weather really triggers them to get out and lay their eggs, and you will see, like, dozens of them. They come back to the same area each year to lay their eggs. The females kind of get an area that they pick out, and they come back to it, and they come back and lay their eggs there year after year. So if you have an area where turtles have come in the past, you may expect them to be coming again this year. And if it hasn't happened yet, it should happen in the next week or two. It's been a little delayed. Not that they were slow getting started, but just this cool weather that came after that really hot weather last Monday and Tuesday, the cool weather that followed seemed to put them off, and I haven't seen that many out laying eggs since then, but they can't put it off forever. Deborah, who lives in the Grand Rapids area, was driving up around the shore of Mille Lacs Lake, and she said from a distance she thought she saw columns of smoke in the air. When she got closer, she could see that they were columns of bugs, and some of these columns went clear above the treetops, and she wondered, what sort of bugs are they? And if these are the bugs that I suspect, they are called march flies, and they look a lot like a mosquito, but they are they don't have the proboscis, they don't have the biting mouth parts, they're not blood-sucking insects. But they form in these big columns, and those big columns, for the most part, are made up of males. And they gather together in these huge columns, and I don't know if it's the frequency of their noise or just what it is that attracts the females, but then the females show up, and as it is with the wood frogs, why, it's sort of, once the female shows up, every male in that column is going to try and be the lucky guy to get to mate with her. So if you see those huge columns of insects like that, and I've seen them myself many, many places, including coming across Indiana one evening, and they were just every mile or two along the freeway, you'd see these huge columns of insects circling around like that. And I think that they're march flies. They probably have another name that's more apt, but they are sort of mosquito-like. And the theory is that the males gather like this so that the females will find them and come to them, and inbreeding can happen. Some of the other notes from this past week, of course, the flowers that are kicking into gear now, Canada columbine. Columbine has seemed to be about in peak bloom. And besides the columbine, we've got false Solomon seal and quite a few other flowers as well. Smooth vetch, that's a pea plant. It looks like sugar peas that you might grow in your garden. The flower does, except that they're purplish, tending toward blue, and they're only four or five on a column in a raceme where the flowers bloom. There are only a few in a group. There's another type of vetch that I think is called American vetch, and there you get same purple and blue type flowers, but you get maybe a dozen or 15 flowers in the group instead of just a few, like four or five, as you do with the smooth vetch. The chalk-fronted corporal dragonflies are out right now, and there are a bunch of them. Those are probably the most common of the dragonflies that you see today, and generally they sit on gravel roads and rest there, and then as you go by, either on foot or on bike or in your car, or whatever, they're going to come flying up off the ground and buzz around. Baby red squirrels are out and not yet acclimated to the speed of my dog. She has handed me a couple over the past week, and they're all about the size of chipmunks, but they're definitely red squirrels, and every one she's handed me so far has had the life squeezed out of it. I'm sorry, but she just apparently doesn't want the competition in her yard. I don't know. Maybe she just likes the game, but she plays for keeps. So if you're a small red squirrel and you're living in my yard, that big red dog, she's playing for keeps. There's no give backs on this one. Goat's beard is blooming. This is a kind of a yellow flower that when it goes to seed, it forms this, it looks like a dandelion on steroids. It's this great big ball of seeds that looks exactly like a dandelion gone to seed. But right now what you're seeing are sort of a paler yellow, not quite as pure yellow as a dandelion, but a paler yellow and open. And if you watch the goat's beard, this time of day it'll be pointed to the east. And as the sun rises across the sky, it'll track the sun very carefully. And along about noon or maybe 1 o'clock in the afternoon, it'll close for the day. Orange hawkweed and Canada hawkweed are in bloom. Canada geese. I've seen a number of molt migration flocks of Canada geese. These are big flocks. The first one I saw was last week, probably Wednesday or Tuesday. And there were about 75 birds in it flying due north. And then on Sunday morning, another flock of about 60 or 70 birds came in and actually landed on Crooked Lake. And boy, there was a clamor then. They really set up a ruckus on the lake. And then they settled in, and I suppose what they did was rest for a while, and then they'll fly north again. And as odd as it may seem, what happens here are the adults who've had maybe a failed nest or just didn't get a nest made, and juveniles and all unmated adult Canada geese fly north in June, and they spend the summer, they spend their molt period up on a lake somewhere in Canada, and it's not always the same lake, but the birds pick a lake and they kind of do their molt where they're unable to fly. And so they stay in these remote spots where they can feed and not run into enemies and not have a lot of people tearing up the water with boats and so forth. And so then they, once they've gone through their molt, they then come back to northern Minnesota or work their way south in smaller groups rather than these huge flocks. And a lot of the work on the molt migration was discovered by a member of KAXE who lives in Bemidji area, and his name is Mike Zikas, or is it Zikas? I can't remember, but Mike did a lot of work on the molt migration of geese from the Crex Meadows area in Wisconsin. And but for him, these northern flights of geese would be a mystery to me and to you now. I got a chance to go out into a bog this past weekend with my wife and my sister, and we were in search of the ram's head lady slipper, which is a tiny flower, and I had never seen one in bloom before, so I didn't know quite what I was looking for, but I had been directed to an area where I might find them. And we looked and looked and looked, and I went to an area where I could see that my wife or my sister or both had actually walked right through this area, and all of a sudden I caught this little bit of white on the ground that was a little different, and I dropped down to my knees and I went, oh my God, here they are. And I looked at the one that was right in front of me that I had dropped down on my knees to examine, and I looked to my right and I had set the tripod for my camera within an inch of a second one. And there was probably 8 inches between my leg and my tripod. And in that little 8-inch space was this second ram's head orchid. And I found a third one right in the same area. And so we got a bunch of good pictures. And there are some pictures on my Facebook page and some pictures on the Minnesota Phenology Network's page of the ram's head orchid, which is the smallest of the slippered orchids, of the cypripediums in northern Minnesota. And it is a gorgeous little flower and well worth the effort to discover. But while we were out looking for that, we also found dragon's mouth, a shocking gob of pink in the middle of this bog. And we found saxifrage, which was just blooming, swamp saxifrage, just starting to bloom. And, of course, Labrador tea and three-leaved Solomon, false Solomon seal, and buckbean, which is kind of getting at the end of its bloom. Then I kicked up a hermit thrush off the ground, and I got to looking around because I thought, there's got to be a nest here. And I looked around and tucked down into this hummock of sphagnum moss, and in amongst these Labrador tea and a young, probably 2-foot-tall tamarack was the nest, and 4 beautiful blue eggs in that nest. It was just gorgeous. The whole scene was really, my sister and I had this conversation, and we thought that in terms of just the exquisite beauty of it, that the ram's heads were lovely, but this nest in its location was just really unbelievably beautiful. It was so gorgeous, just the whole setting. And, you know, it was like this little fairy tale story. I mean, if you could grow up somewhere, this would have been a damn fine place to do it. If I were a young hermit thrush growing up there, I don't know. It was certainly a beautiful, beautiful spot. Beyond that, well, everybody knows that there are a few mosquitoes out there. I found my first horseflies this past weekend, so there'll be those to have fun with. And bunchberry and bluebead lily are blooming like crazy, and northern sweet coltsfoot is blooming and actually coming near an end of bloom. But I was going down Highway 65 to Minneapolis on Sunday, and there were great pom-poms of these flowers that were northern sweet coltsfoot, and they were maybe 3 or 4 inches in diameter and probably 6 or 7 inches tall. There would be 12, 15, or 20 of them at a stretch in the ditch, and they were absolutely gorgeous. And for all the world, as you drove by, they looked like these big white pom-poms. They were really, really pretty. Final notes this week, common lilacs are probably nearing the end of their bloom, and that is late this year. They were late to bloom and they're late to finish, so that stands to reason. It's our spring fundraiser, our summer fundraiser, and if you have enjoyed the Phenology Show, I hope that you will consider taking the time to call us. Our numbers are 326-1234, 1-800-662-5799. Call. Let us know that you appreciate this kind of programming, that you hope to get out and discover some of these wonderful things that I've been talking about right here in northern Minnesota, and pledge your support to KAXE Radio. It's time for TalkBack. TalkBack is your opportunity to communicate with us. Maybe you've got an observation you'd like to share. Maybe you've got a question you'd like to ask. Or maybe you've just got a comment you'd like to make. It really doesn't matter. We're just anxious to hear from you. And you can get in touch with us by calling our TalkBack number. That number is 999-9876. You can also reach us by email at comments@kaxe.org. And you can reach me personally if you'd like to send me an email. You can send it to Jay Latimer, that's J-L-A-T-I-M-E-R, at kaxe.org. And of course, there's the post office, and they're happy to deliver your letters to us. So send us a letter if that's how you like to communicate. We love to get your letters. Something in a personal hand is always an exciting moment. And if you'd like to send us your letters, 260 Northeast 2nd Street, Grand Rapids, Minnesota, 55744. Thank you in advance. We did hear from a couple of you last week, including a note from our good friend Sean, who's been out birding like a wild man. Not that he doesn't, he always birds like a wild man. And he said, Don and I launched my John boat from the Prairie River for a couple of hours this afternoon as most of the stretch below 061 is in my BBA priority block. We were looking for rails, none, herons, none, and ducks. Mallards, a pair, three female common golden eyes, and a probable female hooded merganser flyby, but didn't do so very well. We did have a few nice finds, though. An eastern kingbird was incubating on a nest with its partner nearby, two female belted kingfishers in a scuffle with a male downstream, four singing northern water thrushes, three singing warbling vireos, LeConte sparrow, eight Brewer's blackbirds, sedge wren, and a pair of bobolinks may have been engaged in courtship behavior of some kind. If I knew what bobolink courtship should look like on County Road B. And there were four active nest boxes on County Road B, three broods of tree swallows nesting, and one brood of eastern bluebirds nestlings. I opened all the boxes. Unfortunately, they haven't been maintained by whoever put them up because two of them were filled with last year's debris and two more had last year's nestlings still in them. If I think about it, I'll empty and wash all of them at the end of the breeding season so next year's birds have better options. And that's good advice for any of you out there who maintain a bluebird house or two or three or five or 50 or even more if you're like our friends, the Lauchners, who live out in northeastern Montana. And they run a bluebird program out there that is much to be admired. We also heard this week from our good friend Art, and Art says, very cool about the hermit thrush nest, and it's on the Facebook page. If you'd like to go to my Facebook page, you can also find it at minnesotaphenology.net and check out the picture. I was bungling around in a bog, as is my custom, and Well, what happened was I was thrashing about, and I saw this hermit thrush fly from right down by my feet, and I thought, oh, she's got a nest in here somewhere. And I stopped, stood still, because I wasn't wanting to step on it, and I looked around, and golly, right there, just to the left of me, she actually had flown off kind of almost right in front of me. And just to the left of me, in a little clump of sphagnum moss, was this beautiful mud-formed nest that was just gorgeous, and four deep blue eggs in it. And we took a quick picture, and we got out of there so she could get back to the business of raising those young, or at least incubating them, and hopefully they'll turn out pretty good. But that's about the hermit thrush nest that I saw. So then Art goes on to say, Karen and I found a woodcock nest while doing a breeding bird atlas block east of Warba yesterday, and then we found a golden-winged warbler. All in all, a good evening of birding, unless you count the mosquitoes and ticks. Our count on them was much higher. And and yeah, you know, I did a presentation a week ago or so, And I mentioned that that it's wonderful being out in the woods these days, but there is a price of admission, and to that I posted a picture of myself with, you check it out. Go online and count and see how many mosquitoes you can find on my face in that particular picture, and that's on it's on my Facebook page, and it's also on the Minnesota Phenology Network Facebook page. Go there, count the mosquitoes on my face, and golly, if you'd pledge like $5 for every mosquito on my face, that would be really great. You could do that by calling our numbers, which are 326-1234 or 1-800-662-5799. And heck, if you'd even pledge a dollar for every mosquito on my face, we'd do pretty well. I talked to Ed Dallas this morning. He's recovering from a trip to the Boundary Waters. He said the wind was quite entertaining, and there were moments of absolute, pure, heart-stopping panic. He may not have put it that way, but I could tell that that's what he meant by just listening to his voice. He mentioned, too, that back here in northern Minnesota, there definitely is shade in the woods and mosquitoes, and I had to agree with both of those. There's definitely shade in the woods, and a lot of the spring ephemeral flowers are done for the year. I wish I could say the same of the mosquitoes. They are definitely not done, and they're doing real well. They're making themselves felt and known, but that's okay. It's their business. Ed says that the deer, he saw a couple of young bucks in his field the other morning, and that their antlers now are longer than their ears. And that's always the case as they grow. And I would expect this time of year that to be a normal situation for them. And he mentioned, too, that the chalk-fronted corporal dragonflies, which came out in huge numbers about a week ago, are now starting to prunesce. And that's a fancy way of saying they're getting white. Chalk-fronted corporal dragonflies, when you're familiar with them, they have this double white line on the front of their thorax that looks like corporal stripes, and then they have a big white abdomen. Well, all of that whiteness is sort of a growth that comes from the dragonfly after it develops as a dragonfly. And so check them out. They'll be getting whiter and whiter as the days go by, and they'll be much easier to identify. Those are the chalk-fronted corporal dragonflies, and there's lots of them out there right now. One of their habits is that they sit on the ground, especially on gravel roads. So if you're driving a gravel road and you see a lot of dragonflies getting up off of the roadbed in front of you, they're probably the chalk-fronted corporals. He mentioned that goat's beard were beginning to bloom down in his area, and then he said while he was out in the countryside in the Boundary Waters, he saw young gray jays, juvenile gray jays. So lots of things out there to check out, and Ed sent those notes along from the Deerwood area. We thank him, and we thank you, and we also encourage you to pledge your support to KAXC. Now is the time to call and let us know you're listening. Let us know you like the programming, especially the Tuesday mornings, where we try to, you know, for some of you who come up here maybe 2-3 months out of the year, or maybe you're just up here like these other folks that were here for a week that stopped in this morning. If you appreciate getting a handle on what's going on in nature, call and let us know and pledge your support. 326-1234, 1-800-662-5799.
You're listening to Phenology Plus on KAXE, community radio for northern Minnesota, 91.7 on the Iron Range, Tamarack and Togo Ball Club and Bacchus, 89.9 in the Brainerd area, 105.3 in the Bemidji area, and audio streaming on the internet at kaxe.org. I'm Scott Hall with John Latimer. Coming up, John and Harry Hutchins talk about tadpoles, frogs, and toads on A Talk on the Wild Side, and forester Eli Sagor tells us what's new at My Minnesota Woods, a website for all things having to do with Minnesota forests. This summer, the Headwaters Science Center in Bemidji is hosting an Echo Explorer program for people of all ages. Participants will learn, among other things, to collect and identify insects and plants, build a bird feeder, and keep a nature journal. Echo Explorers will meet 10 consecutive Fridays from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. starting this Friday, June 17th. Call KEXE for registration information. And the Minnesota Women's Woodland Network is hosting a birch bark harvesting class. That'll be at the Forest History Center tomorrow from 1 to 4 in the afternoon. The class will cover the natural properties of tree bark with a special focus on birch, as well as tree biology, the function of the outer bark and inner bark, and harvest techniques. Program's free, but they'd like you to call ahead if you're coming, so call KEXE for more information. 218-326-1234 or 800-662-5799. Phenology Plus is made possible by our listener members, our largest source of funding. We also have support from the Itasca Surgical Clinic in Grand Rapids. At the Itasca Surgical Clinic, patients are provided with personal screening, diagnosis, and treatment of a full range of medical conditions, all in a caring environment. We also have support from Dale's Auto Body of Grand Rapids. At Dale's Auto Body, customer satisfaction is based on 25 years of experience. The staff at Dale's is ready and willing to answer questions concerning the repair and estimating process. At Dale's Auto Body, repairs are vital to a vehicle's performance, safety, and resale value. Our largest source of funding comes from KAXE listeners, and we ask you to take a moment this evening to help keep Phenology Plus and all the other programming on KAXE coming your way for another year. It's easy to do. Decide what this one-of-a-kind radio and online media service means to you and call with a pledge. Maybe you can think of it as something like a newspaper or cable TV subscription that you pay for every month. Only in this case, how much you want to pay is your call. So call now, 326-1234, or toll-free, 1-800-662-5799. We've got bluebird houses, Phenology T-shirts, and hand lenses to wear around your neck on hikes, camping trips, and anytime you need a close look at those things you're curious about. You can pledge online also at our homepage, kaxe.org, or call those numbers again, 326-1234, toll-free 800-662-5799. Support this independent community radio service for Northern Minnesota. Time now for A Talk on the Wild Side with John Latimer and Harry Hutchins. Harry is a forest ecologist, and he teaches in the forestry program at Itasca Community College. This week, Harry and John talk about tadpoles, frogs, and toads.
I just wanted to mention about frogs and toads and where we're at with those, because we get a lot of bird information, and I thought it'd be good to pass on what the amphibians are up to. And, of course, the turtles aren't talking, and neither are the salamanders. But some of the reptiles and the amphibians are pretty silent. But yeah, there are a couple of amphibians that are still yakking out there.
Yep.
And you might get lucky and hear an American toad, but I think if you kids out there are looking for something right now, it takes probably a good 60 days for the toads to go from being a tadpole or a pollywog to being a jumping adult.
Yeah.
And this is a species that's in just about any habitat, and that's what I think is cool, is that for those of us that live in town and maybe have some kind of a retention pond nearby or any other kind of small wet area, sometimes even on lake edges or river edges, but or at least a little bay there, but generally just a pond, these guys are generalists, so you can find their tadpoles, and it's going to take them probably 60, 65 days to get to, depending on the temperature, the warm of the water, and how warm that is, obviously,
right.
It will often have an influence on how quickly they grow.
Yeah.
So check that out. And the neat thing about them, how do you know what species it is?
Yeah.
Well,
how do we?
Well, the American toad is the easy one.
Oh.
It's the only one that's all black in northern Minnesota.
Really?
Yeah, solid black.
A solid black tadpole is an American toad.
Yeah.
Wow.
And often they school together. They don't like being apart.
Yeah.
So you'll see them in these small ponds. Some of them are human designed. It could be at a golf course, for example. It doesn't have to be some wild natural area. Again, the adults are pretty generalist in their habitats. And they can be in natural areas or they could be in a pond you may have around a lawn or something like that. So check that out. I think, to me, that was always a fun thing, John, when I was a kid, was to kind of watch what the tadpoles are doing and the frogs. And, of course, those of you that are living on lakes, there's two species that are beginning to really call, and one of them close to shore that hangs out close to shore and takes about 2 years, a year and a half to develop into adults, and that's the green frog. And the green frog is about 3 inches long.
It's a big guy.
It's a big guy.
Yeah.
And they, they sound like that banjo string that I probably could never tune and never will be able to tune.
You know, I delivered a banjo the other day.
Oh, you did?
On the mail route, I did deliver a banjo.
Did it sound like a green frog?
Well, the guy who got the banjo claimed that it wasn't for him, that it was for his wife's brother. No.
They kind of had that boom.
Yeah.
Boom.
Now, I've heard another one out there that sounds not like that. And I wish I could describe its call, but it was, I knew it wasn't the leopard frog.
But there's one that kind of sounds like a cart, an old Western cart, you know, in a Western movie. You and I remember those, but a lot of the kids these days don't. But it kind of sounds like maybe a garden cart that's 30 years old and has never been oiled, and you're kind of pushing it along, and it kind of has that kind of squeaky, rattly wheel to it. And the mink frog, as opposed to the green frog, the mink frog is the one that's farther out in the lake. That's going to be, so if you got a lake home, you're going to be probably looking at two things. Green frogs are right inshore, and they're right on the edge. And mink frog are going to be out from the shore on the lily pads, and they're going to hunt from the lily pads, and they're also going to string their eggs in a globular mass, not long strings like would happen with the American toad. But these, both the green frog and the mink frog, are going to be have kind of globular masses of eggs, and they're going to be just about laying eggs now. Now, the interesting thing about them, both of them have large tadpoles, and both of them, those species, are going to overwinter as tadpoles and then won't develop until the following year.
So
you may see next year, you may see, or like this year, you may see some huge tadpoles zooming around.
Seen them, yeah.
Which are the ones that are in your lake, in your shore, your lake, or small lake, big pond. And these probably are tadpoles that started developing last year. Because, again, for example, wood frogs, and you can go to ponds now, kids out there, go to ponds in the woods that were where the wood frogs were calling earlier this year, and now again those wood frogs are not going to become adult frogs until the middle of August.
Yeah.
Most of these things you're looking at somewhere upwards of 60 65, 70 days even to develop into adults.
Yeah.
Now, the wood frogs, of course, got that great head start a long time ago.
Well, they started early enough, but they also are racing against time because they're usually in these little vernal ponds.
Drying up.
Drying up, yeah, and as the water gets...
But this is a good year for them.
Yeah, they'll be fine this year. But other years, they as the ponds dry up, they get confined to a smaller and smaller space, and what can often happen then is that the raccoons and the blue herons and everybody discovers them, and they go in and really munch them down. But
yeah.
One of the things that I learned recently reading a book by Bernd Heinrich is that oftentimes these tadpoles, as they get to that stage and things are kind of closing in on them, they'll become cannibalistic and they'll eat other tadpoles.
Yeah.
And once they start cannibalizing each other, their development, it just races ahead. I mean, it's like in 2 or 3 days, they can go from being a tadpole to being a froglet and being able to get out and live on dry ground, which is amazing when you think about it. And Heinrich says, you know, what's happening here is that some of the there's this limited food base within the pool, and they're eating algae and they're eating like leaf parts and whatnot. And at some point when that's exhausted, or this sort of limits their growth potential. If there are a lot of tadpoles, it limits their growth potential. And then at some point, they start eating one another, and it's just like, you know, you've let this guy collect all this food for you, and now you're going to eat him, and it's like moving all that food into yourself. And
hey, I got a question from a listener.
Yeah.
Do they only call in the spring, and when they do become frogs and toads later in the summer or fall, will they be identifiable by a call?
Yes, and that's not very common. But, yeah, you'll be canoeing or kayaking or whatever and around lakes and or down a river and or just walking through the woods. And occasionally you'll get some calls of spring peepers. And occasionally you get calls, again, of great tree frogs, which
tree
are
frogs,
still
yeah.
occasionally calling now.
Those are the ones that kind of got me bow hunting in the fall. I think there's a bird in that tree and he's calling and I can't see him and he's not moving, you know, he's in the same spot hour after hour. And it turns out I was listening to gray tree frog.
But it's not a dependable, you know, it's just every once in a while someone lets one out. And, you know, it's not a chorus. You never get a chorus or anything like that. It's just occasional individuals that you may hear. So it can happen. And I've heard it happen as late as certainly late September. Yeah, so get out. It's not over yet. I mean, there's another... You know, we started with the wood frogs. We went on into the spring peepers, and the western chorus frog, or what you call a boreal chorus frog.
Yeah.
Now, and then we certainly have now moved in. We went through the American toad. American toad is pretty much over. They've done most of their, and the great tree frog is still calling. And the great tree frog always, that's another one that's going to fool you, John, because it's always calling from a perch. It's calling up high. And they like stumps. They like, they'll even go up 20 feet into a tree and call.
My neighbor, Marvin Beard, has one that calls from a barrel in his yard. And he says it really gives him volume.
And so their eggs are just being laid now. So that's pretty cool. And then of course, now we're into the phase after the American toad and the gray tree frog. Now we start getting into the late season frogs, and especially the mink frog and the green frog.
What about the leopard frog?
Oh, I'm sorry. I did forget the leopard frog. The leopard frog was calling at a river or a deep bay. I used to call type 5 wetlands.
That's him in the background here.
Yeah.
That's the leopard frog. Is that right?
Yeah.
Okay.
And my kids used to say that that's the way I sounded when I fell asleep on the chair reading or something. Kind of get that roar. Just kind of snoring.
Yeah.
A very small, soothing snore, I used to tell him. It was soothing.
Yeah, soothing and delicate. That's how we snore.
Right.
Yeah.
Then don't wake me.
Yeah, right. Leave me alone. I'm calling frogs.
So that was also probably kind of the first week of May type thing.
Okay.
And they pretty much...
Are they done now?
Yeah.
Okay.
Harry Hutchins and John Latimer with a talk on the wild side. If you have a question, comment, or topic for Harry and John to take up on a talk on the wild side, let us know. Our email address is comments@kaxe.org. Our talkback line number is 218-999-9876. You're invited to be part of a bio blitz of Minnesota's newest state park on Lake Vermilion on Saturday and Sunday, June 25th and 26th. Join DNR biologists, naturalists, and other scientists to identify many of the plant and animal species in the park. There'll be lots of hiking and scientific inquiry during the 2 days. The event will take place rain or shine, so dress for the weather. Boaters and anglers are reminded to be extra careful to prevent the spread of invading aquatic plants and critters that do great harm to our lakes and streams. When you take your boat out of the water, clean off all the plant material on the boat and trailer, empty water from live wells and bait containers, and dispose of unwanted live bait, including worms and minnows, in the trash, not in the water or woods. The Cutfoot Sioux Visitor Center north of Deer River in the Chippewa National Forest hosts naturalist programs every Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday during the summer. Program highlights include building hummingbird feeders and bat houses and Ojibwe language lessons. Call KAXE for more program information. Our number, 218-326-1234. We are in the midst of KAXE's summer fundraiser. We're raising money to pay for this unique independent radio station, serving communities in north central and northeastern Minnesota for over 35 years. Listener support's been our largest source of funding all those years, so thanks to everyone who's a member supporter now. And if you haven't pledged your support for KAXE, do it now. Those numbers, 326-1234, toll-free 800-662-5799. We'd love to give you a KAXE Phenology t-shirt or hand lens for your pledge at the $10 a month level. 326-1234, 800-662-5799. Time now to check out what's going on at My Minnesota Woods, a website with all kinds of information and advice for Minnesota's forest landowners and anyone interested in Minnesota forests. Eli Sager joins us again. Eli's a forester and educator with the University of Minnesota Extension Service, and he oversees the two-way website called My Minnesota Woods. Welcome back, Eli.
Thanks, Scott. It's good to be back.
So we're leading off today with a lead story called Supercharge Your Woods. What do you mean by that?
Yeah, it's kind of a fun one. We're working with a bunch of folks, some from Grand Rapids, many familiar to your listeners, Cheryl Adams, Dave Chura from the Minnesota Logger Education Program, Kathleen Priest, and a variety of others, on a series of workshops that are coming up that we're pretty excited about. The title of the workshops is Supercharge Your Woods, and it's all about intermediate stand treatments or different ways to use thinnings at different stages of your woods kind of growth and development to make them more productive, to improve forest health, to change the species mix, just for a wide variety of reasons. And there have been a bunch of initiatives around the state over the last few years. The Blandon Foundation has been involved in some of these to really identify the best opportunities to improve forest health and productivity and just take good care of the woods in Minnesota, and intermediate treatments have kind of come up near the top. There are a lot of different ways to do it. There are pre-commercial treatments where, you know, landowners can go out. Pre-commercial just means that the products harvested generally are not large enough or not the right quality and that kind of thing to be sold. So a pre-commercial treatment is kind of an investment in the future of the stand. We'll be talking a little bit about those. but also thinnings that are commercial. A little bit later in the stand's development, you know, in red pine plantations, the trees get big enough eventually that you just can't fit as many trees out on an acre as you could when they were little seedlings. And at that point, you really need to get in there, thin those trees out just like you would, carrots in your garden, to make sure each tree has a little more room to grow. That keeps them healthy, keeps them growing fast, keeps them better able to fight off diseases and pests and so on. And it's also done a lot in aspen, in spruce, and a variety of other species. So we're really excited to do this. This series is targeting landowners and loggers. We do expect to have some foresters there, some natural resource professionals as well. But this series is really kind of focusing in on as I said, landowners and loggers. We've got three of them. The first one is going to be July 7th, just around the corner, at Bob and Ingrid Sonnenberg's property over in New York Mills. Another one a little closer to your listening area, August 25th in Aitken, and then October 6th in Brimson over to the east, a little bit north of Two Harbors.
Eli, is there any kind of minimum stand size, timber stand size, that a private landowner should have or would have to make this a meaningful limb in their management?
Well, it really depends, Scott. I mean, one of the things about this approach is that it's really highly variable. You know, the general answer to your question is that, you know, the higher the value of the products you're pulling out, the fewer acres you need to make it viable for the logger. I mean, the cost, especially these days with timber harvesting equipment, is incredibly expensive. And the cost of just getting that equipment to the site, getting it into the woods, just all of the setup associated with that means that if there's not a decent amount of wood there or particularly high value wood, it's going to be difficult to, you know, for the logger to pay their costs of getting there and doing the work. So if you have, you know, real small diameter material or lower quality stuff that you're taking out, then you will need larger acreage sale. But for later thinnings, you know, thinnings, the second, third thinning of a stand, I mean, you're at that point getting into some real higher valued products, saw logs generally, and at that point you could have, you know, a substantially smaller sale. But you can't really, there isn't any one kind of acreage. There are just too many variables. And of course it depends too on what kind of equipment the logger's using. And as I said earlier, a lot of research points to the fact that you get the greatest financial return and also growth response by doing these treatments early in the life of the stand, sometimes very early, particularly in hardwoods, where you can get in and just free up some growing space around the trees that you want to favor, trees with good form, even if they're only an inch or two in diameter at the, at what we call breast height, 4 feet off the ground. You know, with a brush saw or maybe a chainsaw, you can make a very big difference to the future growth of that stand, and that doesn't cost you a thing except the gas for your saw. So it really depends on what you're trying to achieve. It depends on the conditions in the stand, how big that wood is that you're trying to take out, and so on.
What do people need to do to register? Do they need to let you know they're coming?
Yeah, they do. We're really trying to keep the group small so that we get, you know, good interaction, so everybody can hear and all of that kind of stuff. So it's 25 people per session. And the way to do it, basically, I would just say go to My Minnesota Woods. We're going to have some information up there today, and folks can just look for Supercharge Your Woods and be able to get the information there. If they click that link, it'll take them over to the Minnesota Logger Education Program website where we have all of the details.
Another webinar coming up toward the end of the month. I think it's Tuesday, June 28th. It's on non-timber forest products. Tell us about that.
Yeah, that's Dave Wilsey, and some of your listeners may remember our maple series that we did this spring. That was really a lot of fun. Dave and Julie Medke in Grand Rapids worked with four or five maple producers, a couple real large producers, a couple small producers, and really, you know, worked with those folks to tell their stories of how they do what they do and you know, how the maple production season was going. And one of those was a fellow named John Peterson, who's based in Delano. He has a century woodlot, been in the family for over 100 years in Delano, which is a little bit west of the Twin Cities. And Dave Wilsey, who's an extension forester in Cloquet, is going to be talking about non-timber forest products along with John, really trying to provide a landowner's perspective on kind of the real-world practical aspects of how to do non-timber forest products. John is really a pretty extraordinary guy. He's got an awful lot of experience doing this stuff. And so Dave is going to fill in some of the technical information and kind of the scientific information, and John's going to kind of share his story about how that all, how he applies that information and what he's doing on his property. So it really should be interesting. And you're right, Scott, as you said, it's over the lunch hour on June 28th, and there's no cost for that. It's a webinar. You can, listen to it as you are sitting at your desk or if you're at home. But you do need to register. We have the link right on the front page of our site. If you go there and just fill out a quick form to sign up, we'll send you the web address and tell you exactly how to connect.
Speaking with Eli Sager, a forester and extension educator at the University of Minnesota Extension Service, about what's at My Minnesota Woods website this month, the month of June. And, of course, John Latimer's phenology report is there, as usual. You also profile a MFA member. Who's that?
Yeah, that's Mike Greenheck and his brother Pete and their whole extended family. They just are really a great group. Mike is on the state tree farm committee, very active tree farmer. They have a very large ownership in Minnesota and Wisconsin. I think they're somewhere up around 2,500 acres between the two states. And they just are really outstanding landowners. They've been very active with stream restoration, water quality and erosion management. They produce an awful lot of timber on their property. Of course, it's the vast majority of that is hardwoods, given where they're located. Like I said, they're down across the kind of driftless area in southeastern Minnesota. And really dealing with some interesting issues. And this MFA, we every other month we run an MFA member profile. MFA is the Minnesota Forestry Association. John O'Reilly writes the profiles. He's the president of MFA and really gets into some interesting terrain. And we run these things because I really think it's good for landowners to kind of see what other people are doing. It's sometimes hard to connect with other landowners and get good ideas, and Mike and Pete really have done just about everything. So their profile is worth reading. It's a real good resource that the Minnesota Forestry Association produces.
Okay, Eli, we can also find a forester at My Minnesota Woods. We can join in the discussion board of any topics that people going to the website want to bring up.
Yeah, that's right. There's been a bunch of stuff. Of course, it's spring. There's been a lot of stuff about tree health. Why are my trees dying? And trees didn't leaf out properly, and kind of what to expect from different bugs and other things. A lot of that is on there. You know, another thing I just want to mention, because it's the season, is about tick-borne illness. Tick-borne illness, not just Lyme disease, but other diseases as well that ticks spread, really are out there. And it seems that their frequency and prevalence are increasing, and it's really extremely important for landowners to know what the risks are, know how to protect themselves, and take action, both to keep the ticks off yourself and your family and your pets, and also to recognize them, to check carefully after you come inside. It's some pretty nasty stuff, and we've got a link to a story from the Minnesota Department of Health on tick-borne illness, tick identification, and so on. The DNR's May 2011 Forest Insect and Disease Newsletter is out. They also have the Spring Marketplace Newsletter, which is more about wood products. Cloquet Forestry Center Alumni and Friends Day is coming up at the end of this month. And, yeah, there's a lot going on.
All right, Eli, we'll talk to you again next month. Thanks for joining us.
My pleasure. Thank you, Scott.
Eli Sager, he's a forester and a University of Minnesota Extension educator, and he tells us each month what's new and what's going on at My Minnesota Woods, a website with lots of information and advice for anyone interested in topics related to Minnesota's forests. That's Phenology Plus for this week. Support for Phenology Plus comes from our listener members, our largest source of funding, and thanks to everyone who's a member of KEXE. Don't forget, if you're not a member, it's easy to become a member. Decide what you can afford to contribute over the next year and call in and make a pledge anytime. 218-326-1234. Toll free 1-800-662-5792. 1-800-273-8599. We also have support for Phenology Plus from the Bonner Eye Clinic in Grand Rapids. At the Bonner Eye Clinic, Doctors Bonner, Mariano, and Kincannon have served the eye care needs of Grand Rapids, Itasca County, and the Iron Range for over 45 years. Located at 1542 Golf Course Road, the Bonner Eye Clinic is proud to support KAXE and encourages you to support KAXE. We also have support from Atchison Tire Company in Grand Rapids. Locally owned for more than 90 years, Atchison Tire has offered new tires and repair services for generations of their customers online at atchisontire.com. The Minnesota Phenology Network promotes the study of plants and animals in Minnesota as they relate to climate and the changing seasons. Members of the network share their observations on Facebook, and they welcome you to join the network. You can keep up with John Latimer and many others who post their notes and photographs every week. For more information, go to the Minnesota Phenology Network on Facebook or call KAXE. Those numbers again, 218-326-1234. And toll free, 1-800-662-5799. Theme music for Phenology Plus is by Bella Fleck and the Flecktones and Weather Report. I'm Scott Hall with John Latimer. Thanks for listening.